So I've always been keen in sport. I've always been enjoyable sport. As a young primary school child, I was playing hockey. Then I field hockey. That is not nice. Not ice hockey. There wasn't a lot of ice around where I was. And I've always admired professional sportsmen's discipline and how they can constantly just be so disciplined about what they do. Unlike this lady here. Okay, Ricky, do you want to just play the video? Yeah, but there is a serious point to this. It's interesting how comedians pick up on these things by looking around them and seeing people's sort of traits and how things changed. Well, this morning's title is God's Power and Man's Wisdom. I don't know if you use this acronym on your text messages, but we go with IMH. Oh, now some people might not know what IMHO or never use it, but it's a fairly frequent thing that people text just to rewrite things. In my humble opinion. So do we really mean this? We are unfortunately living in a culture that has taken the humility that was about the individual and now applied it to the truth. We are absolutely certain that we are true and correct. And what is questionable is the truth. Because the truth is relative to me. My truth may be different to yours. Some say the Bible is not true. It's been replaced by the truth of science. You are now autonomous. You are your own God. You have chosen to worship man's wisdom, but God is on the case. He will pursue us. His plan is that we are saved. In the message, 2 Peter 3, verse 9. Don't overlook the obvious here, friends. With God, one day is as good as 1,000 years. 1,000 years as a day. God isn't late with his promise, as some measures lateness. He is restraining himself on account of you. Holding back the end. Because he doesn't want anyone lost. He's giving everyone space and time to change. In Job 38, verse 1 and 2. The book of Job, just some background about the book of Job. It's not the easiest book to read. There's a lot of dialogue between Job and his friends. It may be, interestingly enough, the oldest book in the Bible. Now, I never knew that until I did a bit of digging around. It may be the oldest book in the Bible, so predates Genesis. It's the 18th book in the Bible, and it also has descriptions about God, how God made the universe, which was also a bit of an eye-opener to me. And Job 38, 1 and 2 starts with this. Then the Lord spoke to Job about out of the storm. And this was after a fairly long dialogue between his friends and Job. And then eventually Lord breaks in on verse 38. The Lord spoke to Job out of the storm and he said, "Who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge?" Words without knowledge. I think this is something you come across fairly frequently, like with Stuart trying to organise the bank account for Bridges. He was given words, but without knowledge. And he was given reassurances that, yes, this piece of documentation that he'd forwarded was going to work. And then 2 weeks later, somebody else phoned him to say, "No, this is not going to work." So the person didn't have knowledge. I recently came across this when one of my cars broke. The bottom part of the hose that goes to the radiator had fallen off. It got very hot and it wasn't working very well. You see, the thing is, in our society today, it's not cool to say, "I don't know." We have information literally at our fingertips. Information is not knowledge. The definition of knowledge is the fact, or conditioning of knowing something with familiarity gained through experience. Like Duben, how long does it take to train as a GP? How long does it take to train? I've got some numbers down here, but anyway, to become a GP, you'll need to complete a degree recognised by the General Medical Council, which takes 5 years. Okay, so that's just the background bit. A foundational course of general training, which takes 2 years. General practice specialist training, which I think Duben is doing at the moment, which takes a further 3 years. 10 years to become a GP. 10 years to become a GT. How long for a fighter pilot? About 5 years. So words without knowledge can be incredibly dangerous. I had a nurse when I was going through this thing about my blood clots and stuff. And she hadn't read my notes. And the routine thing was, someone's got a pain in the back of the leg, they get a scan, there's no clots in the leg, stop taking the anticoagulants. But that wasn't my background. And the nurse at the hospital said, "Oh yes, stop taking your anticoagulants." You know, like, and we were like, okay. And when I chatted to the GP about that, he said, "That's a big ask. That's a big deal." So our culture has been duped into this thought that information covers everything. It's essential to have a clear knowledge of who you are in this big, wonderful universe that God has made for us. We are in Christ. We can cause harm to ourselves and others if we get this wrong. The worldview can be a little disjointed. And I know from seeing disjointed joints are very painful. Job also has interesting and significant descriptions about how God made the earth. And when I was confined to my bedroom by Julie, stay in there. That's right. Oh, sorry. Not everybody knows that. Yeah, I had COVID and nobody else was, and it was quite right. And actually, nobody else caught it in the house, which was great. Because I felt pretty rotten for a week. I came across this guy called Dr. Hugh Norman Ross. Thank you, Julie, for that. He's a Canadian astrophysicist and a Christian. And he talks about Job and the Genesis account of creation. He takes the word of God and science and explains the connection between the two about our creator. Hugh Norman Ross, you can find him on YouTube quite easily. He's done lots and lots of videos. His organization has been active since 1986 and is called Reasons to Believe. One of his books is called Designed to the Core. Takes a look at what's required to say sustain life on Earth. Designed to the Core, Hugh Ross takes us on a, this is the sort of wee spiel about the book. Designed to the Core, Hugh Ross takes us on an unprecedented journey to explore the necessary requirements for a planet to support complex life. His truly comprehensive approach to the subject examines every aspect an Earth life friendly environment, from the cosmic supercluster that we inhabit to our location in the Milky Way and even deep inside the Earth's core. The sheer number of needed parameters is mind-boggling, and he unambiguously answers the questions of whether Earth is unique in its capability of supporting complex life. The only question left for the reader to ponder is how such a fortunate planet could have come into existence at all. Many of us who have pondered that question will agree with Dr. Ross that such exquisite design requires an intentional and powerful designer. Scientists are looking to this powerful design in the terms of a term that you might come across called fine tuning. It's been talked about since the 1960s. In 1961, a physicist, Robert H. Dickey, claimed that certain forces in physics, such as gravity and electromagnetism, must be perfectly fine-tuned for life to exist in the universe. A gentleman called Stanley Miller, a scientist called Stanley Miller, set up an experiment in 1953, an attempt to replicate replication of Earth's early atmosphere and oceans to test whether organic molecules could be created in the lab, formed from chemical reactions occurring between inorganic molecules throughout, be present at the time. He created 20 amino acids. Now, Nick Lane, who's written quite a few books, Nick Lane's a biochemistry professor at University of College London, and he's a professor of evolutionary biochemistry. So this guy is, I would imagine, doesn't believe in a creator God. And he writes this. Nick's most recent book, Transformers, explores, explores the elusive chemical logic of life. This is what he says about Miller's experiment. Amino acids are old hat and are a million miles from life, says Nick Lane. Indeed, as Miller's experiment showed, it's not difficult to create amino acids. The far bigger challenge is to create nucleic acids, the building blocks of molecules like RNA and DNA. So this is a guy whose mainstream evolution doesn't seem to have a faith. The origin of life lies in the origin of these replicators, which is the DNA and the RNA. Molecules that can make copies of themselves, Lane says. Even if you can make amino acids and nucleic acids under soup conditions, it has little, if any, bearing on the origin of life. The problem is that replicators, like the DNA and RNA, don't spontaneously emerge from a mixture of their building blocks. And this is a great statement. Just as you wouldn't hope to build a car by throwing some parts in a swimming pool. And this is a mainstream, very well-known, up-and-coming guy who's not a Christian, I guess, but I don't know yet. Because he's on the brink. He's like, I can't answer these questions. A few essential parameters of Earth that allows us to live here are the following. Today, Earth's axis is tilted at about 23.4 degrees with respect to our orbit around the Sun. But there is a slight wobble in this spin cycle. So if you imagine a top spinning around, the top goes a little bit like this, it's not completely straight. There is a wobble in the spin cycle. This wobble is like the one you see with a spinning top, slowly making the tip trace a circle as a toy spins rapidly around. For the Earth, it's rather slow. It's a rather slow wobble, taking about 26,000 years to go full circle. It's also quite gentle, moving the Earth's axis just by 2.4 degrees. Without the Moon to stabilize it, this wobble would become extreme and erratic. Sometimes the Earth's axis would point straight up and down at right angles to the Earth's orbit of the Sun. This scenario, seasons would be a thing of the past, and night and day would be equally long all year round. At other times, the Earth would tilt all the way over and lie on its side in relation to the Sun. This would mean the poles would burn hot and the equator freezing cold. In effect, removing the Moon would spell extreme climate change. There would be a huge difference between temperatures and daylight throughout the year, and ice ages would hit different parts of the world every few thousand years. Lucky for us then that the Moon is going nowhere anytime soon. Well, who knows what's going to happen? Our own solar system, Jupiter, with its enormous gravitational field, plays an important part protective role by deflecting comets and asteroids that otherwise might hit the Earth. Jupiter has helped to create a more stable environment for life to thrive here. Earth's magnetic field is thought to play an important role in making the planet habitable. Not only does a magnetic field set the direction of our compass needles, it also acts as a shield of sorts, deflecting away solar wind that might otherwise eat away at the atmosphere. Scientists now have discovered 200 plus parameters that need to exist in perfect harmony for life to exist. This is man's equivalent of that. Go for it, Ricky. Isn't it nice when things just work? This planet is like that. It just works. It's absolutely amazingly, fantastically incredible. that it's actually here in the first place. In Job 39:4, there's references, as I said, about the creation. And God is actually challenging Job because he's getting a bit moany, he's getting a bit down on himself, and he's saying, look, this is who I am. Were you there when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? And what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together or the angels shouted for joy? Who shut up the seas behind the doors when it burst forth from the womb? And this is quite a key part of this scripture that relates to Genesis. And it's verse 9, 38 verse 9. When I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness. Hugh Ross explains that when the earth was dark, it was because it was wrapped in clouds, not because there was no light in the universe. In Genesis 1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit was hovering over the waters. Heavens were created, the earth was dark, because it was wrapped in clouds. There are detailed descriptions of earth. Have a listen to this about the eagle. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom? This is God's talking to Job from the storm. And spread its wings towards the south. Does the eagle soar at your command? Build its nest on high. It dwells on a cliff and says there is a night. And stays there a night. A rocky crag in its stronghold. From there it looks for food. Its eyes detect it from afar. 9 facts about eagles' eyes. Here we go. Eagles and hawks have the best vision of any vertebrae. Eagles have a remarkable 25 or 24 visual capacity, which means that they can see things from 20 feet away that humans can only see from 5 feet away. Eagles can spot a fish or a rabbit from 2 miles away. Imagine spotting a medium pizza from that far away. Eagles have 1 million cone cells per square millimeter compared to us 200,000. An eagle's eyes has 2 focal points, one pointed forward and the other to the side. An eagle's eyes are huge compared to the body size. The eyes of a 10-pound, 4.5-kilogram eagle may be as large as those of a human weighing 200 pounds. Sometimes a bird's eyes are heavier than its entire brain. Eagle's eyes fill their entire sockets on a fixed place. An eagle must turn its head to look at the side and can swivel its head nearly 270 degrees. Eagles have a 340-degree field of vision with peripheral sight superior to humans. Eagles have been designed to have the ability to quickly change the shape of their cornea and lens to focus on both near and far objects at speed. So they have like a telephoto lens in their eye. They can spot the prey from 2 miles or apparently almost 6,000 feet high. 6,000 feet high. Absolutely incredible. So I've got some quotes here from G.K. Chesterton, who had a huge impact on later Christian thinkers like C.S. Lewis and Malcolm Muggeridge. He was a journalist by trade and sadly only lived to the age of 62. So this is a quote by C.K. Chesterton. People don't know what they don't know. Our culture has lost sight of what is true. We will have our own truth. You may think one morning, this is me, you may think one morning that driving on the right-hand side of the road is a good idea. or like one chap, that you could fly, like the alchemist at Stirling Castle. He needed to impress the King of Scotland, James IV. John Damien made a coat of feathers and told the king he could fly, and was keen to please the king, as his experiments turning lead into gold weren't going very well. He jumped off the side of the castle. The thing was, they helped him. He landed on a pile of rubbish. He only fractured his thigh bone. Damon's response to the failure was optimistic, blaming the inclusion of hen feathers in his wings instead of the exclusive eagle plumage that had been ordered. It was his opinion that the hen feathers were attracted to the ground and not the sky, like those of the eagle. So he's like, no, it's the equipment, you know, it's the tools. I can't, yeah, it's not me, it's the tools, it's the equipment. So G.K. Chesterton also wrote this. Humility was largely meant as a restraint upon the arrogance and infinity of the appetite of men. He was always outstripping his mercies with his newly invented needs. But what we suffer from today is humility in the wrong place. Modesty has moved from the organ of ambition and settled on the organ at the organ of modesty has settled from the organ of conviction, where it was never meant to be. A man was meant to be doubtful about himself, but undoubting about the truth. This has been exactly reversed. Nowadays, the part of a man that a man does assert is exactly the part ought not to assert himself. The part he doubts is exactly the part that he ought not to doubt, the divine reason. For the old humility made a man doubtful about his efforts, which may have made him work harder. But the new humility makes a man doubtful about his aims, which makes him stop working altogether. The Christian Institute has recently published a information regarding understanding critical theory. And basically, this critical theory, for a lot of you, I'm sure it won't be very new. But critical theory is the ideology behind woke activism and cancel culture. It's a lethal blend of Marxism and postmodernism, which also opens the door wide to the ancient heresy of Gnosticism. It has given rise to the culture of identity politics, and offers validation for transgender ideology. The Christian Institute has resourced on all of these issues. So this woman called Sharon James explains, the critical theory is a dangerous worldview that contrives to divide society into oppressors and oppressed. It builds on the assumption that there is no transcendent God. So we each construct our own reality. Constructing your own reality, I would imagine, is really quite isolating. We don't have a reference point, and it's all down to us. What an enormous task, how daunting. I will choose what is right for my life. I get a little bit stressed out when I'm in Tesco's thinking what cheese I'm going to pick up. You think, oh, no. You know, to have this... Well, shall I be a man? Shall I be just gender neutral? Shall I be a woman? I mean, what an incredibly confusing and very difficult place to be. With God, we have hope in times of trouble. We have direction. God is our, and Psalm 46, 1, verse 1 to 3. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear him. Though the earth give way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, through its waters roar and foam, through the mountains tremble at its swelling. I saw something on the BBC News recently about four Nigerian men who were stowaway on a ship. Have you got the picture there on the road? So there they are. That what they're sitting on is a large rudder sticking out the back of the ship. And I've included, this will come obvious why I'm mentioning this. They thought they were jumping on this ship and heading off to Europe. And they were so desperate with the political situation, they thought, this is just the only chance we've got. They were hoping to get into Europe. However, the ship wasn't going to Europe, it was going to Brazil. So the actual, was a 14-day journey that was on. And this is what Roman Friday, one of the guys on the rudder actually said. On the 13th, suffering from thirst and hunger, Roman Friday, one of the stowaways, said this. The first time in my life I've seen such a thing, he said, laughing at the memory. If I told anyone at home I had seen a whale, they will say I'm lying. But as I sat on that rudder, and I saw a whale, and I forgot I was hungry. I forgot I was thirsty. I watched the whale, and it was like watching creation. A holy moment. And I'll just finish with this verses from a song that I'm sure will be very familiar to you. Wisdom unsearchable, God the invisible, love indestructible, in frailty appears. Lord of infinity, stopping so tenderly, lifting our humanity to the heights of his throne. Oh, what a mystery, meekness and majesty. Bow down and worship, for this is your God.